If you don't have a good governance structure, you don't know who could take what decisions. How do we take priorities? Rebalance resources in the organizations. The only way is up. Do you have the mandate? No, let's go to father. Do you have the mandate? No, let's go to father. Do you have the mandate? And suddenly you are very high up in the organization. And the problem actually is that if you have to escalate everything to the top management all the time, they don't have the bandwidth to actually manage this.
Welcome to the Work Matters podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Bertels. In this episode, I'm joined by Jesper Persson to talk about a topic that sounds boring, but maybe one of the biggest levers for organizational effectiveness, governance. Most people hear governance and think about compliance, policies, or bureaucracy. Jesper defines it as much more simply. Governance is how an organization steers itself. How do we set expectations? How do we give people the mandate to act? And how do we follow up on performance? In our conversation, we explore why organizations oftentimes get stuck between functional silos, unclear decision rights, and overlapping governance models. We also talk about the messy middle of transformation, where the vision is clear, but the organization struggles to prioritize, rebalance resources, and make cross-functional decisions. Jesper brings a practical and refreshing perspective on how better governance can unlock effectiveness without adding more bureaucracy. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and if you do, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Jesper, welcome to the Work Matters podcast.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Looking forward to this.
Same here. We've been planning this conversation for a while. And what we want to talk about is governance and effectiveness. Those two words don't normally go together. When I think of governance, I think about compliance. I think about structure. How did you end up being interested in this topic?
How on earth do you get passionate about governance? When I describe this, I usually start with talking about Tetra Pak and how I was once employed to run unusual projects. Tetra Pak, it's a global company in the packaging industry. So coming in there and having as a title project manager for unusual projects, that was not what it said, but that was the intention of it. When I look back to it, it was very often about cross-functional effectiveness. And when you start to drill down to say, what's the problem? Why do we get cross-functional effectiveness problems? 9 out of 10 times it was about governance. How do we prioritize? How do we deal with resources and so forth across these functions? That was probably the moment for me from seeing this as something really utterly boring, policies and so forth, to be a competitive advantage in driving performance. So after 15 years at Tetra Pak, I left, and since then I've been helping companies with these sort of problems. And interestingly, no matter where I go, I've actually had one project with the UN, one of the organizations there, I've been to EU, I've been to Bank, I've been to so many different businesses and areas. And these problems always surface and they look very much the same. That's a bit of my background to this.
So let's unpack that a little bit. Governance, most people think about that as the controlling aspect, compliance and so forth. You have a different understanding. What's your perspective on governance? How do you define it?
Let's go back. Where did this word come from? When I did that the first time, I was surprised to see it is a nautical term. And it means to steer. So if you imagine you would like to go from, say, Athens to Rome, how should we as effective as possible steer the ship to come to Rome? And if we would now say, like you said, policies, the policy is perhaps who owns the ship. That's not the way it works. That's not what takes you from Athens to Rome. It's really about having clear understanding of who does what. What do we expect from each member on the ship? Who is doing what? And how do we run the ship, and how do we follow up that we're actually going there in the way we were thinking? So those three things: set expectations, give a mandate, and follow up on your performance. Those are the three principal things in governance.
Organizations do that, obviously. We define annual objectives and we cascade them down. They're tied to bonuses and so forth. Isn't this the problem we could solve with org design? I'm being facetious, but I'm just wondering, we designed it so well, why do we still need the steering element in that?
And my question back would be, are we designing them so well? Probably not, huh? But it's true. We are rather good at setting performance targets on the business because we have shareholders, we have the market and so forth. Actually, quite often we ask a function to define what are the KPIs for you and how would you do it. It's actually not always given. We ask them to do them themselves. But there's some sort of a gap there, isn't it? There's a structural gap between we should have this revenue versus this is what the function should do. And that is, what is our expectation on that cross-functional, the flow across the organization? And it's very seldom I see that in a good way and managed in a good way. So I would say that true, but still not true. There's a gap in what we're doing. And this is something I often do when I go into an organization. That is actually to say, how do you set expectations from the leadership team? What are the processes doing? What are the functions doing? And how does it all connect? How do you give a mandate? And actually, when you start looking at the mandate, already there, you normally see collisions between what is a process owner doing? What is a functional manager doing? And they are not in agreement. So already there, you start to see it's becoming complicated. And that trickles down. Some organizations are not really good at following up and taking actions on their KPIs. And some are doing it, but the only way they can improve is efficiency, doing what they're doing in the function a bit quicker and not asking themselves, are we doing the right things? I would say that's quite a bit for many organizations, quite a journey for many organizations to actually be good at this.
We're driving things through functions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. The functions got to deliver, right, on their commitments. But we lose sight of the cross-functional, the process view, end-to-end. You mentioned the word process manager. Sometimes they put somebody in there who's supposed to play that role. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that work effectively, managing by process or value stream? Is that an answer to the steering problem?
I have the luxury of saying yes to that one. Those who starts to reading up on processes and processes, governance and so forth, they will run into Michael Hammer. A lot of what we read about process reorganizations and so forth originates from Michael Hammer. And Michael Hammer, he had this invitee only. It was called the Phoenix Consortium, the best run companies in the world who were working together. And Tetra Pak was one of those companies. And I had the luxury to being part of the Tetra Pak team. So I've actually seen a number of occasions where it worked. And it's a tremendous difference to what we normally see, to be honest. But going back to your question, if you have a process manager, what do you task that person with? Quite often you ask them to do process mapping. And you very often even ask consultants to come in to do the process mappings. You have these huge process maps, but that's not the same thing as having process governance. That's a snapshot of what people thought to be true at the moment. And very often, if you start looking at it and you have, say, the same type of function, say you have production, but on several different places, most likely they're not doing the business the same way. I was working with one company here and it was actually down to each team to have different setups to the machines. So it was really different. And then if you have a team starting to do process mapping, what happens? They try to fit it in and then you have a paper which is a virtual description of this, but that's not the same thing as process governance, running by processes. And if you try to implement those processes and saying, let's harmonize this, let's do it like this, very often you would see that the functional managers say, no, this will impact our performance. And then you have functions winning over processes.
So we're operating in functions because that's how things started out. Mm-hmm. And that structure converges at the top of the organization. But from a governance perspective, one probably can also overdo it. Everything has to be escalated. That's probably also not what we're talking about.
Definitely not. If you don't have a good governance structure, you don't know who could take what decisions. How do we take priorities? Rebalance resources in the organizations. The only way is up. Do you have the mandate? No, let's go to father. Do you have the mandate? No, let's go to father. Do you have the mandate? And suddenly you are very high up in the organization. And the problem actually is that if you have to escalate everything to the top management all the time, they don't have the bandwidth to actually manage this. So what happens is that you get approval and saying a decision, but going back to this, now we have set the expectations. How do we set mandate, and do top management have the time to continuously follow up on all of the things that are escalated? So then suddenly you get a lot of things raised up, but you're not following through.
And maybe give us an example for where you walked into a situation where there was a lack of effectiveness and how effective governance helped unlock that trapped effectiveness. Could you share maybe an example?
The last area I was working with, that was in manufacturing. And they were actually starting with building their own equipment. So they had an engineering department. And when that was completed, you have the projects to actually develop and install them into assets, and then you should run and having maintenance on them. Now, typically when you go in there, when we went into, say, mechanical engineering, they were doing a good job based on doing mechanical engineering. But they didn't really start thinking about how should I do this to improve the overall equipment effectiveness. What is it that maintenance needs over there to make these assets working as with high standards as possible? The first step of actually having a governance is do you even have a feedback loop? Do you even have a feedback loop to know, is this something that works or doesn't work? And then when you start looking at it like this, you can start saying, what are the critical parts in an equipment that has the highest impact on our effectiveness in our factories? And that is really something you can sort out with the governance. Setting expectations, mandate, follow up.
I would imagine that in an ideal world, there are cultural norms that encourage people to look at this from an enterprise perspective versus just a narrow functional lens. So that maybe that steering only needs to come into play when there are conflicts that can't be resolved. It's really just like a trade-off that you have to make. Are we going to prioritize uptime? Are we going to prioritize A versus...
Let me ask you this. If you have weak governance in this, what is the culture you build in the company?
If you have weak governance, assuming lack thereof means weak governance, I think the culture you build could be anything from anarchy. Everybody reinvents the wheel, creates their own processes, duplicates things, shadow IT, things.
Yes.
Everybody spends all their budget without necessarily driving the performance you're looking for. You have a negative impact on your culture. People become more siloed.
You don't have the arena for it. And if you don't have the arena for it, the attention that we need to improve on something, it's not there. The effort is humongous. And it's so easy to sit and blame other functions saying, we can't do this because of, like this. You can become efficient, doing the things you want to do a bit quicker in your function, but you're not effective. You're not asking, are we doing the right things? And what's worse is if you live under those circumstances for too long, you start to normalize it. What happens is the person and the organization that is downstream start to saying, oh, this is the way it is. Now we need to have a group of people fixing it. And then if you link that to saying, well, the size of my organization is also an indication of how strong my position is as a leader, not necessarily do I want to take that away. It really builds new problems to do things like this.
We tend to look at this as individuals. We put a person in charge of a function. Now we got to make that individual work well with whoever's next. But we don't really have a team approach to this. We don't look at this. Yes, you wear a functional hat and you bring something to the table here. But you are part of our value stream. We're operating as a team. We have shared objectives. And that's the most important part. Yes, you got to come home. You got to deliver to your boss against your objective. But the more overarching pieces, do we drive value for the customer? The example that comes to mind for me is pharmaceutical drug development. You have functional disciplines that support these projects, regulatory, toxicology, whatever it might be. But the project has to go through the process and has to go through it fast. And so if you align it too much towards the functional dimension, you'll never get it done, right? Because they all then start to prioritize these projects.
Yes.
So the teams intentionally get a lot of autonomy. And you rely on the team members to go back to the function and make the case for the project to get the resources they need. So is that a little bit the model we're talking about?
I would definitely say so. That's a simple thing I do when I go into an organization, just trying to get a quick understanding, really quick. And that is to ask these three governance questions. How do we set expectations? How do we give a mandate? How do we follow up? And I go through three different layers of the organization. So I ask this question and saying, how is the top management doing this? How do they set expectations? And then go to the next one and saying, how do we do it with processes? Next one is, how do we do it in the functions? And the last one is, how do we do it with IT and architecture? Because more and more of the business models are becoming digital at this time. Asking these questions and then seeing, do they fit together? Do we have an operating model where these questions and these layers are in a way working effectively together? If I would ask you, you have been to several places, Thomas. How many cases have you seen that these four, if we bring in a focus on these four, with these three questions are working as a combined operating model in an efficient and effective way?
Oh, never. It might work on one or two of those dimensions, but I think expecting everything to work well together, I think is virtually impossible. It's human nature that we're talking about. But I think what you also sometimes see is it doesn't work on any of them.
With the other, that's quite common. It's not like they're not working as a whole. They're not working individually either. I think that's a very good statement.
It's easy, obviously, to sit in judgment and say, gee, they're doing a terrible job. But one also has to admit that large global organizations are incredibly complicated animals.
If you and I would go together and look at a company and say, what governance structures do you have? You would find functional, you would find process, you would find IT, finance. You would find probably 5-10 different governance models living on top of each other.
But I think the steering part of it, that there's actually somebody who drives it with intent and persistency towards a better outcome, that I think exists more on the function level.
Yes.
Because that's a traditional power structure. It tends not to really exist at the process level. Because if you do that, then you end up with some weird matrix organization. And I don't know what your perspective is, but those tend to be hard.
Very hard. It's very hard. And you need to model that so they work seamlessly together. My point is that when you are starting to building those governance structures, very often they are doing a new governance structure without asking, what are the other governance structures we already have in place? So you get a tapestry of governance model above, which is then the governance overload syndrome. You have too many different governance models on top of each other, and no one can really read through who is taking what decisions with what mandate.
Let's maybe talk about governance in the context of large-scale transformations.
Large-scale.
You use a term I like. You got to explain it, though, to our listeners. The messy middle. What do you mean by the messy middle?
A step back and saying, how did this business transformation start? Let's say it's the leadership team that have been working intensely and said, hey, our old business model, for whatever reason, is not holding water anymore. We need to do a change. We need to change this. And they are preparing a new bold statement of saying the organization, the company should go from here to over there. There's communications about it. And most likely that vision is good. So the end target, we need to go over there, is rather smart, or really smart. That's an imperative that we get there. And what happens then is you ask each of the functions. We said before that functional governance is probably the strongest one that we have in 99% of all organizations. So we ask them to start looking inwards and saying, what do we need to change to go there? So what normally happens is that we ask this organization, these functions, how can you contribute? And they will look into the agenda of things they would like to change. They will say these five fits, perhaps rebrand them, and you would start to see immediate movement. All the functions are reporting, yes, we understand, and we have started to move. So we have a good start and we have a good end. But as the name is referring to, the messy middle, something happens in the middle. And as this was now a big business transformation, at some point in time, the way we have normally done our prioritization, taking decisions, reprioritized or rebalanced resources and so forth, that has been happening within each function, that model doesn't work anymore. You need to actually start saying, should we go with Thomas' ideas and priorities, or should we go with Jesper's, or who should we go with? And if Thomas gets one resource more, Jesper can lay off 5, 10, whatever it could be. And most transformation comes to this phase unprepared. And that's why it becomes messy. The thing that I try to advise organizations is to say, this phase will come. It's not a failure. It's part of the transformation. So instead of going there and just being surprised by it, plan for it. Really start out saying, where do we believe this will happen? And when we come there, how will we do these things? How will we prioritize? How will we take decisions? How will we rebalance and so forth? I've been into quite many big transformations, and I don't think I have seen anyone at this point doing this as a starting point. I don't know if Thomas, if you have seen it, but almost everyone comes in and saying, oh, we're surprised. What do we do now?
It's really funny. People say, be prepared for the unexpected, but this is actually being prepared for what you definitely can expect.
Yes.
I'm going to get to that point where start to shake the foundation of the existing model and the antibodies are going to come out. So how does this play out in the real world when you get into that messy middle?
Really good question. The other day, a friend of mine, he's a project manager. It's quite a famous project here in Sweden. They had something they called the Tollgate 2 meeting. And they had done a lot of preparations. This was sent out and he came into the room and there were four managers. And as this was now suddenly nothing that really fell within each functional domain, it came across them. No one felt that they could take a decision. I have read it, but not in depth, and I don't understand what happens here, and so forth. So suddenly this yes and no was a difficult thing to do, because if you say yes and it was wrong, you could be blamed if you said no. So suddenly the most rational thing to do was to say, we need more information, we need more time. And so instead of actually moving the project forward, you came into an undefined area of, let's look into this a bit more. If we, on the other hand, would have prepared for it, we would have most likely sat down and said, we will have these four managers. We will need to take these decisions. How should we do it? And then prepped all of that structure before we came to this, because that was probably one element of a larger program. And I would assume that they had perhaps 5 or 10 more project managers coming in with similar, you know, aspects, and the same result would come out.
The good news is we can probably anticipate when that happens and prepare for that to avoid that people get stuck and trapped in this and just spin their wheels. That's really good advice. But in general, I find that most leaders, when they talk about effectiveness, they don't go to governance. They go to technology, they go to process. How can leaders figure out if governance is a problem / opportunity for them? What are some of the questions they should ask? Where should they look? How do I see if this is something that I need to work on?
I think that's a brilliant question. Let's go back. Let's stop saying governance for a moment. If I would say, does the way you steer your company have an impact on your performance, on your effectiveness? You would say yes, huh? No, of course. Huh? So why is it then that we need to ask the question, does governance have an impact? Well, of course it has. So why do we hesitate? Why do we ask the question you used to ask? And I think this goes back to when we started this podcast and you said, most people think that governance is something that it isn't. If we are saying governance equals structures, stupid policies, then there's no link. Then there's actually no link. And I would say, don't do it. But if we go back to what the word really means, how do we steer the organization, most likely you would say, yes, of course. And I think that's the element that's missing. We have forgotten what the word means and replaced it with policy documents and boring structures. That's the first thing. And then I would probably do exactly what I said before. I would do this. It's in half an hour, maximum an hour, to say leadership, processes, function, IT. How do we set expectations? How do we set the mandate? How do we follow up on performance? And does it work together? If it doesn't, you know you will have effectiveness problems.
You convinced me that governance is not something to be scared about. It's actually critical to unlock organizational effectiveness. We can get efficiencies within a functional model. We can't really get effectiveness was a functional model, or it's unlikely. Obviously important as I look at transformation, because again, at some point there are choices to be made. You got to make some decisions. Just as a fork in the road comes up, just keep going straight is not an option. I love the simplicity, how you look at it and the hierarchy that you laid out, how to ask those questions. I'm sold. Governance is very important. It's not about bureaucracy. It's about driving the bus. And it's critical that leaders think about this. What's the work that you do? How do you help leaders get their arms around that? What kind of help do you provide?
The first one is actually to get an organization to understand this is a topic.
So education.
Education. Aware. Very often it's about education. It's really about, do we have a problem? Do we have an issue? The messy middle you mentioned, when we released that article, and it's on LinkedIn, I remember it took like 20 minutes, and then the first organization reached out and said, do you know what? We're in a leadership crisis meeting, and this article showcased why we are here. From that perspective, if you are in the messy middle, you will recognize yourself really quick. Then you have an issue, you want to solve it. But when you go to an organization that works quite well and you start saying, have you thought about this? It's quite a learning curve. There was one organization, we were discussing this with different members for 2 years. We got some passionate about it, but when they went upwards, they didn't see it and so forth. So that took a bit of a longer time. So that's the first thing, really getting people to put some attention to this. And what quite oftenly happens is that if you don't have attention to it, you have an organization that starts to compensate. Let's make this really, really simple now. So if you don't have processes in place and you have several similar functions in different places, they will come to the same problems and they will start to solve them differently. So you will start to have mushrooming in the organization. And then that trickles down to IT, and then they will have a tremendously difficult IT landscape to manage, and then they will say, no, this doesn't work.
So shadow IT would be one of the signals that tells you there's compensation going on, there's a lack of steering.
Yes. When we go into organization and help them, it's to educate, it is to visualize where do you have the problems, where are the weak spots, how do you fix them? Sometimes really to bring in the big governance model that you eventually need, that will take too long. So what are the quick fixes that we can do with feedback loops and so forth to get this to work a bit quicker? And then you start modeling this. And the interesting thing is, you said, oh, this is complicated. It's actually not. I would say it's more complicated to have overlapping governance model that no one's understand than having a coherent model and being able to say, does this work or what do we need to change?
People want to have their cake and eat it too.
Yes.
Right? I think people say, yes, I want process effectiveness. And so I'll put the framework in to drive that. But I'm not willing to give up on the functional control that I have, for example.
No.
Is that one of the impediments? I mean, there is a price to be paid.
It is, with the danger of we go open up another Pandora's box when we ask that question. There are solutions to do that, because most functions will understand, if you go to them, that we can't be totally unique in our way of doing the same business. So the problem is sometimes when you see organizations saying we are totally decentralized or we're totally centralized. There's no in between. And that was something that we realized, and we started to say, can we change that way of looking at things? So we developed something we called balanced centralization. And balanced centralization is saying, what is the minimum things that we would like to do the same way? And what is then the arena for you to develop your local things? How do we agree on this? And that really makes sense, even in the most functional organizations. You know, I've been meeting with a lot of functional managers and saying, yeah, we can understand this, because what I'm hesitant is that I need to change totally my business model and all of my KPIs and metrics and promises will go bananas. Huh? So really to find this and then draw a line in the sand and saying, these are the things that we will do in the same way, and this is the arena, making that stable, and then to look at it again and saying, did we put the line in the sand in the right place? Or should we move it somewhere? Should it be more the same, less the same? And quite oftenly, it will be, well, we would like to take the next step. We would like to have even more together. So that's normally what happens.
Okay. So it's not necessarily more control, but more collective decision-making versus...
Yes,
right,
yes. So if we would go from... the process perspective, we could say, which are the processes that we all agree to should be the same?
I think it's a super interesting topic, because if you think about organizations, we have this classical top-down model. We know that doesn't work in today's world.
No.
Right? Because they're just way too complicated. And by the time we make a decision, we're all dead. Mm-hmm. We also know that driving all the decision-making down, it works in some businesses, in many, it doesn't. No. If you're a pharma company, you can't have every little operating company decide which assets to develop. I think the reality is that it's got to be somewhere in the middle, but you got to have a language, a framework for, again,
how to do it,
understanding it, optimizing it. I love your minimalistic approach to say, like, what's the bare minimum we can agree on that should be done together, and then try it out and work from there and ease your way into that. Because I would imagine a lot of times that means driving decision-making down in the organization, empowering people to make these decisions, holding them also accountable for those decisions, And we learn, we got to feel our way in. It might be too much, too little. It sounds like the support you provide really helps people not just install something, but actually install it and then fine tune it and tweak it to make sure it delivers what they're looking for.
Yeah, I met with a senior manager from a Danish company, and we were speaking about it, and he said, yes, but you need to look at this as a cardigan with a zipper. So we can't merge everything at the same time, but we can take it step by step. And balance centralizations is a way to manage that. And not necessarily do you want to close your zipper all the way up, because it doesn't make sense. So how do you know how far you should take it? How do you govern that, and how do you work with that? That was the idea of balance centralization.
Listen, we talked a number of times, and every single time I talk to you, I learn something new. So first of all, I appreciate your generosity. And secondly, I think this was a really interesting conversation, because I think a lot of people just look at governance as it's the last topic we want to talk about. Maybe this podcast changed that a little bit. We'll put a link to your website as well as to that article on the messy middle that you mentioned into the show notes. I highly encourage people to check that out. And in the meantime, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Really a pleasure, Thomas. Big thank you for allowing me to come on board.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.